How many more empty nests will it take?
Well, perhaps it wouldn't be empty if she'd spent more time laying and less time escaping.
So laying eggs all your life and then getting plucked, stuffed and roasted is good enough for you, is it?
It's a living.
You know what the problem is? The fences aren't just round the farm. They're up here, in your heads.
There's a better place out there. Somewhere beyond that hill and well, it has wide open spaces and lots of trees and grass. Can you imagine that? Cool, green grass.
Oh, feeds us.
We feed ourselves.
Well, where's the farm?
There is no farm.
Then where does the farmer live?
There is no farmer, Babs.
Is he on holiday?
He isn't anywhere. Don't you get it? There's no morning egg count, no farmers, no dogs and coops and keys, and no fences.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128, but were you play Nintendo? On some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, lies. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs for every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't been turned.
Welcome to This Is America, June 8th, 2018. In this episode, we were lucky enough to catch up to both a member of Appalachians Against Pipelines for an update on the Hellbender Autonomous Zone, as well as Mauro Villalpando about the Chingala Migrator, ongoing actions against private immigrant detention facilities in Tacoma, Washington, and ICE's own attempts to deport her for being, quote, a Latino advocate. But first, here's our roundup of resistance and repression news. In big J20 news, the remaining three people from the current J20 trial block all were acquitted or had the remaining charges declared a mistrial by the judge. While the state could still come back and retry them in 30 days, this represents yet another blow to Kirchhoff's attempts to enact a draconian crackdown on protest. Moreover, these defendants, often referred to as breakers in court, were supposed to be a slam dunk for the state, and Kirchhoff and friends claimed that they would easily show that they were guilty. Things turned out the complete opposite. One juror that spoke to Unicorn Riot after the trial stated that they were afraid that the state would use the trials to set a precedent of attacking political protest. Many articles in both mainstream and center liberal outlets also noted the continued failure of the state to enact guilty verdicts, as well as continuing to waste massive amounts of taxpayer dollars. It remains unclear what will happen now to the remaining 40 or so defendants, but many predict that more charges will be dropped soon. Moreover, the Industrial Workers of the World of the IWW has called for a global day of action in support of J20 defendants on June 25th. They are specifically calling for people to protest outside of Department of Justice or DOJ offices. Over 250,000 UPS workers are set to go on strike over a new contract. One report wrote, quote, "The devastating strike may disrupt the nation's economy." Protests began in Quebec City against the G7 summit as heavily armed riot police were out in force. One report wrote that protests, quote, erupted on Friday morning and that protesters, quote, said they achieved their goals of shutting down Quebec City after the legislature was closed on Friday and many businesses decided to shut their doors. Meanwhile, in the halls of power, tensions remained high between G7 leaders over Trump's proposals for tariffs and America First policies. In Charlottesville, Virginia, as people rallied outside the courthouse, Corey Long was sadly found guilty of disorderly conduct and now will have to do 20 days in jail. More updates are expected soon, as well as info on how to support Corey. After the verdict, people in Charlottesville took to the streets in protest. Be sure to check out Solidarity Seaville for more updates. In other Charlottesville news, walking alt-right embarrassment Jason Kessler keeps putting out mixed messages as to where he will hold his Unite the Right number 2 rally. Will it be in Charlottesville or outside the White House, or will he do both? Currently, it appears that he has filed so far for a permit in D.C. Here's one story we missed earlier this week, but big ups to the Eagles for taking a massive bird poop on Trump's comb-over by refusing to attend a White House dinner celebrating their win at the Super Bowl. Also, big ups to everyone that booed Trump during his short-lived rally, as well as the brave individual that took a knee during the national anthem. In Brooklyn, people rallied to support a pizza delivery man that was kidnapped by ICE and now faces deportation. In LA, home demonstrations continue to take place against slumlords organized by tenants on rent strike. Meanwhile, the F Your Flips campaign continued to trend on social media. In Atlanta, anti-fascists put up posters linking, quote, incel violence to far-right blowhard and all-around creepy man, Jordan Peterson. In Chicago, members of the Autonomous Tenants Union organized protests against gentrifying real estate capitalists holding, quote, an event to teach rich people to use Airbnb, a service intended to help rent spare rooms for short periods to finance buying multifamily buildings. Of course, they'll have to kick out the existing tenants first. In Colorado Springs, Antifa made quick work of trust fund fascist group Identity Europa stickers and made sure to put up some of their own. Finally, there's a lot of events this weekend. The Fight Toxic Prisons conference kicks off today. In the Pacific Northwest, people are defending Planned Parenthood from Joey Gibson and his merry band of Proud Boys on June 9th. Monday is also June 11th, or the International Day of Solidarity with Long-Term Anarchist Prisoners. See our show notes for upcoming events. Till then, see you next week. Make sure to keep It's Going Down around for the long haul. If you can, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop, sign up to become a monthly donator, or give us a one-time gift. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next week. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody from Appalachians Against Pipelines. There's just been so much going on this week. We wanted to touch base with somebody and just kind of hear what all was happening on the ground. So can you just tell us what's been happening the last couple of days?
Yeah, there's been a lot that's happened in the last few days here in so-called West Virginia and Virginia. There had been very long-standing aerial occupations in the so-called Jefferson National Forest, but what we've been calling the Hellbender Autonomous Zone. A tree site that had been up for over 90 days was taken down by the U.S. Forest Service, acting in concert for the Mountain Valley Pipeline and the U.S. Marshals. And we also had a sky pod that was also blocking the access road to that tree site right where they're trying to drill under the Appalachian Trail. And that that occupation also came down. Our friend was extracted from that position. Earlier this week, there was a equipment lockdown along the along a different part of the pipeline route on State Road 219. Early in the morning on Monday, three comrades acting in solidarity with folks in this region locked themselves to various pieces of equipment where the pipeline is going to be drilled underneath the road, which is like kind of the main road through this part of Monroe County. They were extracted by the West Virginia State Police and also charged with three misdemeanor charges of trespassing and obstruction and resisting arrest. So it's been a pretty busy week down here.
So is there anybody from the initial tree sits that is still up in the trees right now?
No, there are no tree sit occupations going on at all at this point in southern Appalachia blocking the Mountain Valley Pipeline route. So we've gone from several sits being up all around the region to none at this point. So it is discouraging, but we're definitely not backing down, and we're going to keep fighting this pipeline.
And this includes the area, the Little Teal Crossing as well?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Charges, have people faced any charges after they've been extracted, like the people that were up there for 90 days?
Yeah, our comrade Deckard also went to court this week for his initial arraignment after coming down from the tree site in Hellbender Autonomous Zone. And he is facing several petty misdemeanor charges in federal court. also including like occupying an illegal structure on national forest property and impeding National Forest Service work and trespassing on the easement.
Mm-hmm.
So he will go back to court in the U.S. federal court in West Virginia on these charges in a couple of months.
Okay. And then there was an action this week. There was a lockdown that took place that shut down construction for 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah. It was a really great time. Three of our comrades acting in solidarity came from Massachusetts, and they locked down to several various pieces of equipment where the Mountain Valley Pipeline has been drilling underneath the road. They were also joined in support by a lot of the local folks who are fighting this pipeline that will be cutting through their community. And we had a really great time hanging out on this road. This road is the kind of main artery through the county. And we had lots of folks come by able to see this act of resistance. And it felt like a very powerful reminder to folks in the area who are seeing this construction cut through and destroy their community, to remind them that folks are still here and folks are still resisting this pipeline. And this fight is definitely not over. We had lots of we got to basically have like everyone passing through the county on their way to work or school see what we were up to that day. So it was a really great morning there.
Awesome. That kind of brings me to my next question, is what is the situation with people like Red and all the other people that are facing eminent domain?
I can't actually speak to their specific cases at this moment. Obviously, folks in general in this area want to support each other in fighting this pipeline along the entire length of the along the entire length of the construction route. the folks at Appalachians Against Pipelines, we do want to stand in solidarity with folks who are experiencing this taking of the land for eminent domain. But we also want to recognize that all of this land is already stolen land. We are already living on occupied land this process that has been going on for centuries through settler colonialism.
Right. So what happens next? I mean, obviously you can't divulge too much, but I mean, what's next for the campaign, and also how can people show support? What do you all need to continue?
Sure. We would definitely encourage folks to come out. Of course, we love it when we see like folks taking autonomous action against the Mountain Valley Pipeline, against its corporate sponsor, EQT. We encourage folks to like continue spreading this fire that's been catching around this region in creative and bold resistance. And if folks are interested in coming to do work in Appalachia, you can find out more about our campaign at Appalachians Against Pipelines on Facebook. We also have a Twitter and an Instagram. We definitely would encourage anybody who would like to come out and spend some time to email us at AppalachiansAgainstPipelines at ProtonMail, and we will send a form for folks to fill out. And you can also find a link to that form on various posts that are on our social media as well.
Awesome. Anything else you want to talk about or address?
I don't think so. It's shaping up to be like a really beautiful summer here in the Southern Appalachia, and we are committed to staying in this struggle and continuing to resist this pipeline in new, creative, and bold ways. And we hope that folks can join us here this summer.
Awesome. Well, so awesome to see that even though at this point they've gotten people out of the trees, that this is in no way over.
Yeah, totally. We are definitely still here.
Right. Awesome. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Okay, so tell us about the Chingalo Migra Tour. What caused this? What's happened so far?
Yeah, so I think that last year gave us a good sight of what was coming under this administration in regards to immigration. And I think that although it's been clear that there's really a war on immigrants under this regime, it has also been clear that the resistance that was already built years ago when this detention and deportation machine was created, it has also grown. And we believe that our first calls to end detentions and deportations have to evolve to a point that we have to call for the abolishment of ICE. Really, the only way for us to end detentions and deportations is to dismantle the entire agency that was created with that sole purpose, right, to detain, to deport, and destroy our families. For us as majority Mexicans organizing against this machine, we have a saying, and that saying, that verb, is really a verb. It's encompasses everything in one single instance of what do you do with something that shouldn't exist. So you say that it should. It's hard to translate, but I mean the closest right. Translation would be fuck. But or the one permitted in media would be abolished. And so we decided that we needed to use a very strong terminology to explain that we need to dismantle the entire agency and making sure that it never comes back. So we decided that Chingala Migra would be a good name for a tour that goes to the cities where our resistance already has been already happening.
Right. Well, yeah, you can't reform cancer. You cut it out and you get rid of it.
That's right.
I'm just curious, ICE was formed in 2003. Why was it formed? Was there something that happened that caused the state to want that apparatus of control?
9/11 definitely was the I see it as the ring that fell into the Republicans' finger with no problem to ensure that their plans to really erode civil rights, and especially of immigrants, because we have always been the easy target, could be accomplished. The Republicans already had in place a plan to deport every undocumented person by 2012. That plan was called Endgame, and it was published at some point, and it was online available. But when it became really clear to understand that they were really utilizing 9/11 as excuse to criminalize immigrants and to create a new sort of business, so a new enterprise, the document was taken offline. And that's how ICE was created. It was created basically to ensure that that plan would take off, but also that new companies will benefit of this criminalization by privatizing the detention of immigrants. And now we see it 15 years later, it's worked perfectly for great corporations, big corporations, right? They made their money out of this and started off with private prisons. So the detention system that we know now as it is, it really is an extension of the private prisons that started back in the 80s under the Reagan administration.
Right. I know when they were first talking about SB 1070, there was a lot of stuff that came out. There was like a real division within the elites in Arizona. You know, one segment wanted migrant workers for cheap labor, and the other one wanted what you're talking about, to make money off of people through private prisons. I'm just curious how you see that tension playing out. Do you still see that they, like, do they want both? They want to basically have migrants here working for very cheap and afraid to be deported, but at the same time, they want to put a lot of people into these private prisons to make money that way. Do you think they want both, or there's still like a tension between the elites about where they, what they want to do with people ultimately?
I think that goal hasn't changed. I mean, if you read the bills that have been introduced for the past years in regards to immigration reform, it's a clear intention to create cheap disposable labor. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, to guarantee that as labor is deported, these people still make money out of them, right, out of us. And although I think that what happens right now is that we have a racist, xenophobic rhetoric that wins votes of the extreme right. And so it's just a win-win for them. They sound tougher than they've been in the past. But at the end of the day, these same people that call for detention and deportation, they're still benefiting economically of migrant forced labor. Trump himself, everybody knows that he has had people working for him that are immigrants. And I think everybody that sits down and write those bills, they do it because they know they benefit out of our cheap disposable labor.
And I just wanted to turn now to your case. ICE has come after you. You know, this first started, you know, right when they were targeting lots of activists and organizers. Can you just talk a little bit about what's happening with that?
Yeah. Again, in 2017, we saw this war, really a declared war against us as immigrants, especially, you know, it started with a war against Mexicans and I'm Mexican. Mm-hmm. The way they've been labeling us, and the way they've been stereotyping us, the things that they accuse us of, is just so clear rhetoric to win these you know, bigots to their side and against us, and you know, to scapegoat us for every problem that there is in the United States that they don't want to be responsible for. Mm-hmm. So we saw cases in 2017 of people that have been outspoken, have been organizing, and all of a sudden they're placing deportation proceedings. So we expected that this could happen. And so in my case, it came a little bit different, though, because I don't have any sort of trigger for this deportation proceeding to begin. And that's when I think my case became popular, in the sense that there was nothing really for them to use against me, right, to begin a deportation proceeding, because again, I don't have any contact with the police. I don't have any contact with ICE that could trigger deportation. And some people thought it could be an easy case, and it has proven not to be that case, because I was placed in fast track. So all the cases that were open in 2018 have been ordered to be fast tracked, which means you go really, really fast on the process, not as in years past where even hearings could take, if not months, years. In my case, it was actually in a couple of months that we were given a hearing date. We requested a continuance that was denied. We also requested several documents, which were denied. We introduced a motion to terminate based on the document that we found, because ICE didn't want to give it to us. The document that pretty much spells out that ICE labels me as an anti-ICE activist, as a Latino advocate of my community, and that I spoke to media about my immigration status.
That is the terminology that they use, a Latino advocate?
They said, and she works with Latino advocacy groups.
And wow.
So I didn't know that, you know, defending your community was a trigger for deportation. I didn't know that, you know, working against an agency that is destroying your community is a trigger for deportation. I didn't know that talking to media is a trigger for deportation. And so we presented that motion, and the judge did not agree with us. He denied the motion. We also presented a motion to bring ICE to testify to my hearing. We wanted those specific ICE officers that had to do with my case. The judge also denied that. So far, we've been denied everything we've requested. And on May 22nd, that I had my second court date, was postponed for June 26th. So now I have to go back on June 26th and figure out then what are we going to do next. Again, thinking, you know, if my case is so simple, if my case is so famous, and it's so hard to win, can you just imagine how would it be for the rest of the families that don't have this kind of support, don't have this kind of publicity, don't have legal representation, right. And ICE, they're coming after us with everything they got.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just so clear. I mean, obviously, you are being targeted because of all the amazing work that you're doing, but, I mean, to have them spell that out on paper is phenomenal. I'm just curious, you know, a lot of people have started a conversation after everything's come out about, you know, the mass trials and the separation of children. I think a lot of people across the U.S. right now that are, you know, not migrants themselves or maybe they don't even know anybody that's gone through that, but they're asking, like, what can we do to stop this machine? Like, what advice would you give them?
Well, you know, it's so sad when we've been calling the attention to this horrible system for years, and
right.
It's just until now that people are paying attention.
Right.
You know, we get reaching to this level that children are being detained separately from their parents, where their parents have been already detained. So when people say, where are the children? We're saying, where are the parents? And so we hope that one thing people realize is that they shouldn't wait until things get this bad. Right. And we're still on a time during these horrible years where we think we can still stop it. And the only way it can happen is organizing in your own community. And what we mean is not to come and save immigrants. That's our own role. We can save ourselves. We said it again and again, but we do need support. And that means, what are people willing to do? What are they willing to risk? Because right now the risk is really high for any of us as immigrants. So what is that other people are willing to do to stop this before it gets worse? So for example, we've seen communities that organize themselves as they see a possible ICE patrol running around, and they start checking with each other. They start taking pictures. We saw in New York where the entire block came out and didn't allow ICE to grab one of their neighbors. I think that it gets to that point where you have to decide, am I going to allow ICE to take my neighbor? Am I going to allow them to take the people I know in my town? The other thing we need to understand is we can make changes also at a local level. We need to continue pressuring the sheriffs and the police departments to stop their collaboration with ICE. They've done it several times, even here in Seattle. That's why we did an action on Tuesday, because still Seattle Police Department works with a specific task force from ICE, the ICE agency, supposedly going after, you know, drug trafficking. But then it turns out that they made up the charges, and they go and get one or two people, but then there's 20 more and they take them all just because they happen to be in the same place. What they call...
Or like this mass raid that just happened where it's like a nursery.
Right. So workplace raids, I mean, you name it. They're using every tool in their toolbox. And that's why we're asking people to, you know, especially in small places, small towns, people know each other. They know where the sheriff goes and buys their groceries. You know, they know their city council person, where they go to church and things like that. Have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Tell them, I don't want you to collaborate with ICE, and I want to see exactly what that looks like if you say that you don't, right? To actually monitor those processes. Right now, we're calling here in the Seattle area for this Saturday. We're going to do a special solidarity day. We do them once a month outside the detention center, and we just find out, where are the mothers? The mothers of children that were separated at the border, 60 of them were transferred here to the SeaTac federal prison. They were charged with reentry, and they served that time because now it's a federal charge to reentry. And it turns out that they finished that sentence, and they're still held at the SeaTac federal prison. So we're going to show up there outside the prison this Saturday at 1 p.m. in SeaTac. And we're asking people to come and not only wonder where are the children and demand to find them, but we just found the mothers. They should be released immediately, and they should be out with their children as soon as possible.
Right. And for those that want to stay up on all this action that's going on that you're a part of, where can they go to get more information?
Well, in regards to the Chingala Migra tour that just left a very successful note here in Tacoma, Seattle area, go to migente.net. There's the other stops being a plan, and there's the schedule for that. They actually invited people to open their doors and invite the tour to go to your city if you're organizing, if you're also part of this resistance movement. In regards to our local work here against ICE in Washington State, you can find us on nwdcresistance.org, and our social media is nwdcresistance.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Is there anything else that you want to add or touch on?
Well, we just want to make sure that people know that Chingala Migra is not only a tour, but it's a call for everybody. Mm-hmm. When we get to the next presidential elections, every single candidate, we hope that use Chingala Migra as a platform and decide to really call for the abolishment of ICE.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much and best of luck.
Thank you so much.